Hey fam, I'm Jada Pinkett Smith, and this is the Red Table Talk podcast. All your favorite episodes from the Facebook Watch show in audio, produced by Westbrook Audio and iHeartRadio. Please don't forget to rate and review on Apple Podcasts. On this Red Table Talk, an incredible story of survival.
You were found outside in trash.
An inspiring conversation with my good friend, Tommy Davidson.
You say mom saved your life.
And I just want to thank you. That's the reason why I'm here.
Tommy is one of the most entertaining people you will ever meet. You may recognize him from In Living Color, dozens of movies, or a stand-up. But behind his laughter was a world of pain, one that I witnessed firsthand. And now he's come to the Red Table to tell us how he survived and thrived.
He's a miracle.
He shouldn't be here.
What's up, girl?
Hey,
how you feel? The twins.
How you feel? Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. Welcome.
We're just gonna go straight to the table.
Okay, all right.
Don't start, because I know you're about to.
I'm about to take one of these scented candles with me. God. Is this the Red Table?
This is the red table, Tommy.
All right.
Actor-comedian Tommy Davidson has been a family friend for more than 20 years, and I wanted him to come to the Red Table to share his journey. It has been one of ultimate survival against all odds. Tommy!
I'm glad to be here.
Glad to be here.
Anticipating being here has been a little bit hard for me because talking about the stuff I never did.
You know what's interesting is that I've known you a long time.
Mm-hmm.
An aspect of your journey that I didn't know was the beginning of your story, that you were found outside in trash.
Mm-hmm. So it was an abandoned house. There's a woman, she went in, there was nothing but kids in there doing drugs and drinking. But when she was leaving, she said, something told me to look under this tire that was in a pile of trash next to the house. She said, when I moved the tire, I saw your foot. When I moved the trash, you were laying there.
Yeah.
I had a torn red shirt. I had contusions in my skull, like dents that I've been hit and starved. And
Were you close to death?
Yeah. They didn't think I was going to live. I was in a coma. Who knows how long I had been there. It was dirty.
The stranger who found baby Tommy in the trash was Barbara Jean Davidson, a mother of two. As he clung to life in the hospital, Barbara Jean made a decision that would change her life and his life forever. She adopted Tommy and brought him home.
My mom was my hero. She was like the most fierce protector.
He was welcomed by his new brother, Michael, and sister, Burl. Born just 35 days apart, Burl and Tommy were raised as twins and were inseparable.
We shared a room until we were like 14. Burl is my rock. She's definitely my other half.
They lived in an all-white town. Tommy felt like he belonged from day one.
When she adopted you, this little black boy, she's from Wyoming.
Uh-huh.
How was it for the rest of her family bringing you into the fold?
I never felt for one minute that I was different at all.
That is really interesting.
And, you know, so I learned my colors from the crayons. So I know brown. Brown was a brown crayon. My sister was peach.
Right.
I thought I was a brown one of whatever we were.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because I grew up on farms. The horse would have a colt. The horse could be a brown horse and have a black colt.
Right.
You know, or a dog can be a brown dog or a white dog and have like a speckled one.
Yeah.
Have a brown one, have a white one.
Yeah.
So I thought I was a brown one of whatever we were.
Right.
My grandfather was the first one who started telling me about race.
He was trying to prepare you?
I was playing with my cowboys and Indians, and he said, I want you to know that the Indians are the heroes, you know, and I want you to know that all cowboys didn't kill Indians.
Mm.
I'm a cowboy.
Ooh.
You know, and I was like, okay.
Right.
One of the things that came out of my experience is that all white people are not the same.
Right.
Yeah. But when I got to D.C., this is when it all changed, because we moved into D.C. during the riots. When King got shot, and every day after school, grown white men were chasing me home.
Hmm.
Wow. I would barely get in the house.
How old were you, Tommy?
I was 5. People were throwing in our window, people shooting, and that's the first time I heard the word nigger. It was crazy. And that really hurt me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that really, really hurt me because I'm like, you know, like, what am I supposed to do, choose sides or something?
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know anything about this. Like, what the hell? It was like a bomb went off in my brain.
Yeah.
So then I was somewhere playing, and there go again. Nigga, get him. Two white teenagers chased me, and these big black dudes came out. And white boys went the other way, and I've been black ever since. That was the day.
Right.
You know, yeah, that was the day. I was like, you know, they came out from nowhere, man.
Right.
Man, I said, yeah, I'm all right. I said, man, I guess I am black. You know, let me
I'm
look
good.
At you. Let me look into this.
Good.
Let me look into this. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
So that was the moment.
That was the moment that
you identified
yourself. It stamped.
That's really interesting that she moved the entire family to D.C.
Mm-hmm. I remember we moved there. We had our little radio, and Ball of Confusion was playing. It could have been something in a movie. And there's people moving in, people moving out. Yeah, yeah. All of it's color of the skin. Yeah, yeah. Run, run. Run, but you sure can't. Do, 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 do.
Yeah.
Doom. Ball of confusion. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, where are we?
Did she ever explain to you why she did that?
Mm-hmm. She made sure that I was in a black neighborhood. But for my brother and sister, it was hard.
Yeah.
But I think deep inside, my mother, you know, she did that for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, black girls wanted to show my sister.
Right.
You know, I had to fight them.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I was like the hero of the neighborhood because I could sing really good.
Right.
Like really good ever since I was like 5. So my mother would impress her friends.
Right.
You'd ask me, come over here, put me on the table, take a spoon, put tinfoil on it, mm-hmm. put on chain, 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 respect. Put on, say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud.
Right.
And you, I'm doing the Mustang and doing the pony and killing it. I had Sly in the Family Stone, you know, different strokes for different folks. And so on and so on and shooby dooby dooby. Ooh, sha sha. We got to live together. You know what I mean? I'm in everyday people.
It seems killing like you it. Had the coolest white mom, though.
Oh, yeah, man, there ain't no doubt about that. My mom said, Tommy, you have a way of putting things that makes people happy so fast that all they can do is laugh. But I never thought it would lead to comedy.
At 22, Tommy went to an amateur mic night for the first time and killed it. His career took off. Eventually, his talent caught the eye of the Wayans brothers, landing him a coveted role on the iconic sketch series In Living Color. His dream of making it big was finally coming true.
He went on to star in dozens of films and TV shows.
But despite all the money, fame, and star treatment, Tommy was far from happy.
Tommy and I did 2 movies together, as you already know, Bamboozled and Woo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first time that we worked together and I really got to know you on the set of Woo, I came out for a scene and you looked at me and you were like, something's wrong with you. I was like, what you talking about? Let's just get to work. You know, there's a million people around doing stuff. Yeah, camera and action, you know. And I said, ain't nothing wrong with me. She said, something wrong with you. And I was like, let's start the day. She was like, nuh-uh. She said, come here. What's wrong with you? I said, my mother contacted my real mother. And, you know, she was on the phone. I got a chance to talk to her, but I ain't gonna deal with that. She said, oh, really? Okay, hold on. That's a wrap, everybody. That's the day. All right, you go deal with that, all right? Later.
Oh,
and
God.
It led from our conversation to me finally meeting my biological mom.
When he was 38 years old, Tommy met his birth mother for the first time.
All my life, I was mad at her. You know, I always would say, where are you? I had a lot of resentment and anger for her abandoning me.
Tommy continued to channel his pain into his performances. And then drugs led him to a tragic tipping point in his life. In his book, Living in Color, Tommy admits that his addiction undid everything he accomplished and nearly killed him. One night at a girlfriend's house after ODing on cocaine, paramedics rushed him to the hospital with no clothes on, strapped to a gurney. The fallout, broken relationships with a string of women, and 4 of his children.
What was the thing that got you into the heavier stuff? The first time you did cocaine.
I was 16. Somebody gave it to me. Everybody had it. Right. I had it all the time. And I said, okay, I'm going to try it. I was like, this is kind of dandy. This ain't nothing.
Right.
I didn't think nothing about it.
Right.
And it just became one of the things.
One of the things.
Yeah. No, it became the thing.
Right.
It got really, really bad.
Yeah.
You know, I lost a marriage. I lost, you know, it was just, it's just one of those things that just kept on
going.
Kept on going. That's when Spike actually called my mother. He asked me, you know, because I went to him and said, hey, I'm having a hard time here. So he went on and told me about his father, how his father was strung out for years and what it did to his family. And the main thing was to gather my strength. He said, I have a selfish motive. I need you in this movie. But most of all, you know, you need to be okay for your family, for you.
You were kind of in and out of rehab.
Yeah, but the whole world that I thought was, it wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I had it all backwards.
Right.
Yeah.
See, what I was thinking is if I just could be successful, if I just could get this right,
yeah.
I was thinking, you know, I'm going to give me an Oscar and an Emmy and all that stuff. You know, I'm going to get that stuff.
And it's,
I'm
gonna that's be all what it's about,
you know what
right
I mean?
There.
And it became yep. that, you know, get the house and have the this and have the money and have the, then everything is going to be cool. So I would do that and then it would fall.
Right.
And I would do that and then it would fall. And then I would do, and I couldn't understand why am I not making this connection?
Right.
When I became addicted to drugs, you know, I was a functioning addict just the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But those kinds mm-hmm. of successes are the kinds of things that keep you in denial about who mm-hmm. you are and where mm-hmm. you really are.
Are, mm-hmm. yeah.
I call it being a functional addict.
Mm-hmm.
You know
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Right.
He hadn't and, hit yeah. his bottom yet.
Where was the point that you hit your bottom?
In Philadelphia. I did a show. I was going on stage that night. My talent was gone.
Wow. So what do you mean by that?
Like that thing that came out of my mouth so naturally was gone. It's like the
opposite.
So you
bombed.
It was more than that. I wouldn't consider that a bomb. What I would consider that is a solid message. If I gave it to you, I can take it from you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are you on my team?
Mm.
Yeah, he stripped you.
And so that was in front of 5,000 people. The next day, I didn't want to go to a doggone AA meeting, but I went. And there was a guy in there, and he was talking about how he was going to the NFL and how drinking and stuff like that took all of it from him. But what he said that got my attention was, he said, all my life, I thought that people were stabbing me in my back. And I turned around to see that I'm the one with the knife in my hand.
Mm.
And I was like, it's me.
Yeah.
It's me. It's not if the white ex-wife or you do this. It's not if you treat me right. It's not if racism wasn't. Well, not, it was me.
Yep. You say mom saved your life.
Right. And you called me.
And I called you.
And I
said,
was in
what
Pittsburgh.
The hell's going on
yeah,
with you?
Yeah, I was in Pittsburgh. And you was like, hey, what's up? You all right? And I was like, yeah, I'm all right. You said, hold on. And then, bam, she
took off. And I just came in with reinforcement.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
With reinforcement. Because yeah, by that time, you had already been exposed to the program.
Right, yeah. Right. I had been. So. But it's a process. Yeah. It's something that had to take its hold,
right,
you know?
Yeah.
And I just want to thank you because that saved my life. And that was one of the many things that happened that are the reason why I'm here.
Wow. When your mother passed.
Mm-hmm. She could hardly talk, you know? And she's really worried about me all those years, but then I was doing fine.
But it was still hard.
Mm-hmm. To really trust that I'm gonna be okay because she's passing away now.
In 2006, Tommy lost his beloved adoptive mother, the woman who rescued him from the trash, to a rare form of cancer.
When my mom passed away, I realized that I am my mother's greatest accomplishment. She shaped me. And she knew that she was sending out into the world somebody who can give love. And that's my purpose. So when I'm asked, what's your greatest accomplishment? It's being Barbara Davidson's youngest son, Tommy. The last thing I did was sing to her.
Your mom?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she used to love I sing. She used to love I can sing. Love I can sing. And I sang Kenny Loggins' song.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a little while. Take the time and find its way to you.
Mm-hmm.
Soon as you no longer try, Suddenly it'll be staring in your eyes. Don't forget it. If you let it, it will come to you.
Right.
And that was my last words to her.
Right. It sounds like to me that there was a lot that happened mm-hmm. during your addiction journey. Mm-hmm. Are you still in that process of, like, mm-hmm. repairing that mm-hmm. with your kids?
Yeah. One of the things that's come with my life is not to apologize, mm-hmm. but to atone.
Mm.
And a friend of mine taught me that because I didn't know what atone meant.
Yes.
Yeah. Because apology doesn't mean anything
right.
if your yeah. behavior stays the same.
Right.
Yeah.
So she explained it to me. She said, apology is saying sorry, but sorry runs out.
Yeah. Right.
Like an old cartridge.
Yeah, sure it does.
But to atone for something is to change the behavior.
Absolutely. Our atonement and our healing came from me watching her mm-hmm. be a maternal support and grandmother to my children mm-hmm. that she might not have been for me as mm-hmm. a child. But she was right there all the time, making severe sacrifices to be there for me and for my children mm-hmm. in the way that really just dissolved anything that had happened mm-hmm. in right. the past. And mm-hmm. so I understand that atonement because mm-hmm. she was a new person.
Right.
It wasn't even anything to talk mm-hmm. about, you know what I mean?
But what yeah. I tell you, what has been really painful for me in our journey too mm-hmm. is to see Jada's relationship with her children and realize all that she missed with me. That has been extremely, extremely painful for me to, I mean, I'm happy for it and I'm so proud of her, but you know, and the loss is just as much mine as it is yours, so. Yeah. It's difficult.
It is. I hope for you that there will be an opening in some way to really have a deep healing mm-hmm. with your kids. Because...
And it ain't gonna happen overnight, I'm gonna tell you. Because I think we still struggle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. it's just such a process. And I just don't think it ever ends.
My oldest daughter, you know, she, you know, I ain't nothing to her right now.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's okay.
Yeah,
that's
it
okay.
is.
I found a picture of us, so I took it and sent it to her phone.
Yeah.
I said, this is who we are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And just let it be.
Let it be. Right. It takes
be what it
time
is.
And those yeah. openings occur.
Right. Mm-hmm. So what words of wisdom mm-hmm. would you have for people that are going through
a hard
any
time.
Kind of struggle right now?
Have courage enough to trust someone with your secrets.
Ooh.
And let them help you.
Mm-hmm.
Let them help you. Because it takes a lot of courage to do that.
It does.
You know, because are you going to love me the same?
Yeah.
If I tell you some of the stuff I really did?
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised that
They will.
And
you'll be surprised that you are not unique.
A whole other world opens up.
Yeah, you're not
so
unique.
So many people have gone
through
that.
A whole other world opens
yeah,
up,
yeah.
you know. And I never really thought about how much help helps until I needed it.
Yeah. The one person Tommy says helped him through all his hard times is his beloved twin sister, Burl. Even though they now live on opposite coasts, Burl and Tommy still talk every day, but it's been over a year since they last saw each other.
Man, that's my twin.
No!
Nah. How did
Can
you do that?
Can we bring a chair out for Burl? Can we bring that chair out?
Surprise.
You talk a lot.
Welcome.
All right, y'all asked for it.
Hi.
Hi, Burl.
Nice to meet you. Welcome to the table.
Yes. It's so nice to meet you. I heard that you guys are how far apart?
1 month.
Oh. Twins.
I just thought it was so interesting that you guys were raised as twins.
We were in the same grade.
Same grade until seventh grade.
Until seventh grade.
Great. That has to be a trip.
Well, you know, you're all I have and all I've had. So you mean the world to me. You're everything, really. And everything I protected growing up and everything that was important to me was you.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I'm the crier in the family, so.
Wow. Would you say that in seeing Tommy now and everything you've seen him come through, would you say that you're proud of your brother?
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah.
He's been through everything.
Yeah.
Like,
you would think he's not here. She shouldn't be here.
Right,
you know?
He shouldn't.
This right here, you know, what we've been through, you know, for us to be sitting here, she was all I had.
Mm. Yeah. I tell you what, it has been wonderful just to have the opportunity to see you guys together feel like y'all are really sister and brother, okay?
Yeah.
For real, for real. Thank you so much for coming and blessing the red table. Thanks, guys. Thank you so much. Yeah, this is good. This was beautiful.
Hey, RTT family. Join our Red Table Talk group on Facebook to become part of the conversation. Be sure to follow the show page to catch up on all our episodes.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's a gift for us. You don't know how. When we have black men come to the table and honest about their story, we don't have it often.
Mm-mm.
And it brings a humanity because people just look at our men going through and they don't know why.
Right.
They don't hear the stories in order to understand where our men are coming from.
To join the Red Table Talk family and become a part of the conversation, follow us at facebook.com/redtabletalk. Thanks for listening to this episode of Red Table Talk Podcast, produced by Facebook Watch, Westbrook Audio, and iHeartRadio.